No one likes feeling trapped. Can you remember the last time you were trapped? For me, as I thought back on the last year, it was on a particular flight that I was on. It was actually a Delta flight, and I say that because the Delta associates handled a really difficult situation remarably well. I was taking a red eye from the West Coast direct back to Atlanta. Anybody love red eyes? Has anyone flown one that you've decided never again? Yeah. I don't know why. Every time I fly a red eye, I think no more. I'm not doing that ever again. And then I forget and I do it again. And so this was one of those situations. But I had just actually fallen asleep when I felt the plane starting to descend. And so I woke up and I thought, oh my goodness, that was amazing. That was very painless. And then I heard someone say that we were landing in Salt Lake City, which is not Atlanta. And I quickly, as I got my bearings, I started realizing why. There was a passenger on the flight who was having a bit of a problem. He actually was trying, he was angry, he was screaming. He had been trying to use the restroom. The problem was he was trying to use the restroom in the middle of the aisle, in the middle of the flight, which is not legal. So maybe, I don't know if it's illegal to do that, but it's definitely not appropriate. So he had spent a little too much time in the Sky Club before we took off, evidently. And so we were stopping in Salt Lake City to drop him off so that he could get some help. But while we were there, we ended up just sitting there for a couple of hours because there was some confusion around the amount of time that this particular crew had flown and some pilots. And we had to wait on another one. And that feeling set in where you feel trapped, you know, I got to get off of this thing. I don't like the way this feels. Maybe you felt that way. You've been in an elevator. Certainly, you've probably been on a flight before where you've experienced that. Maybe you've been on a bus or a car or maybe in a room. Hopefully no one feels trapped right now. You are free to get up and leave whenever you would like. Just want to let you know that. None of us like to feel trapped. But what we're going to talk about over the next couple of weeks is there is a potential, there is potentially a problem for all of us that perhaps we can be trapped by our own minds. I'm sure you know this, but all of us are carrying around a mindset. You woke up today in a certain frame of mind. You walked in today. You decided to get online and watch this today with a certain frame of mind, a certain mindset. A mindset is just a way of thinking. It's a mentality. And you know this to be true, that you got to get your mind right, because once you get your mind right, everything else follows. The problem is we have these thoughts, and our thoughts, fortunately and unfortunately, can create feelings both in the here and the now. And it's not necessarily what happens to you, but it's the messages that you give yourself about what happens that determines your feelings. And not only do our thoughts create all of our feelings, but the thoughts that defeat us are almost always fraudulent or wrong or distorted or illogical. And sometimes they can form a cycle, a mentality that becomes a trap. So how do you know? How do you know when a mindset has become a mind trap? There's an ancient Greek philosopher named Epictetus who said this, that we are disturbed not by things, but by the view in which we take of them. We think it's the circumstances that are disturbing us, but no, it's our view of them that's actually disturbing us. That's what the series is all about. Specifically for today, I want to call your attention to this one Helen Keller quote. Helen Keller was born blind and deaf and went on to do so much good for our society. And she introduces the topic that we're going to talk about today. She says, self-pity is our worst enemy. If anyone could have had self-pity, it was her. She says, self-pity is our worst enemy. And if we yield to it, we can never do anything wise in this world. And so what I want to do is, over the next couple of weeks, I want to talk about three specific mind traps, three specific traps that all of us have the potential to get caught up in. Today, we're going to talk about the victim trap. Next week, we're going to talk about the trap of negativity. In week three, we're going to talk about the all or nothing trap. And my hope for every single one of us is that we would be able to get out of that feeling that all of us have. Maybe you have it right now, even as you heard what the next 3 weeks are going to be about. You maybe immediately thought, oh, I know someone who's super negative. They definitely need to hear next week. There's nothing wrong with that, but I would love for us to get past that, to go, hey, what is in me? What actually is in my mind that could use an upgrade? Because the truth about all of us, no matter who you are, no matter what your background is, we're all on a level playing field in this regard. that all of us have been, will be, and maybe even possibly are currently being trapped by our own thoughts, our own way of thinking. And so today I want to talk about, what does it mean to be trapped in the victim trap? What does it mean to be caught up in that way of thinking where you feel like a victim? You see the world through the lens of, I'm a victim. I want to give you a couple of different scenarios, and I didn't write these scenarios about anyone specifically, so if this is a little too personal for you, I promise you these were just generic examples to try to get everybody on the same page. Let me give you some examples here. You might have a victim mentality. You might be caught up in the victim trap. If maybe you're a parent who maybe your kid just got in trouble at school, just got in a fight at school. And maybe your natural inclination is, oh, it was not my kid's fault. Sweet little Johnny would have never done that. No, it was that other kid in his class's fault who was agitating, or it was the teacher's fault who allowed it to happen. But my Johnny would never do that. He's a victim. Or maybe at work, maybe there was a promotion that you really wanted and you didn't get it. And instead of evaluating, what did I do that led to this? Or what didn't I do that didn't put me in a better position? You just naturally think, oh, it's the boss's fault. It's her fault. She's always had it in for me. She's always had a problem with me. From the first day I started, she's never liked me. I can tell by the way she looks at me. It has nothing to do with the fact that I've spent a lot of time online messaging friends and shopping on Amazon. It's all the boss's fault. I'm the victim. Or maybe if you got in a car accident last year, maybe that motorcycle that was in the next lane just started to drift over into your lane and it caused you to hit something that you wish you wouldn't have hit. Immediately you go, well, it was his fault. It has nothing to do with the fact that maybe you were distracted in your own thoughts, weren't paying as much attention as you could have or should have or wanted to. No, you are the victim. Or maybe your best friend called. You were going to go to dinner. You had the plans. They had been on the calendar for a while. But your best friend calls and says, hey, I can't go. I've got to study. And you just naturally think, study for what? I mean, you always make good grades anyway. Why do you need to study? Here she goes again, making up excuses as to why we can't hang out. This is so like her to do this. I'm done. You know what? Next time, I'm not even going to invite her. I'm the victim here. And it happens in church as well, right? Maybe if you're in a small group, you've experienced this. Small group leader asks a question, and of course, they call on someone else to answer it because the small group leaders never really liked you in the first place, despite the fact that you had your hand in the air, and there were only 8 of you in the room anyway, so it should have been very obvious that you wanted to answer the question. But here he goes again, calling on someone else. The church is filled with cliques. The last church that I was in, they had cliques there as well. And here we go again. This church seems like it's got it as well. I'm telling you, we could go on and on and on with examples and illustrations. But the question is where in my life have I become, am I resorting to, am I trapped in feeling like a victim? Let me give you just a real clinical definition for this. A victim mentality causes us to blame everyone else for all of my problems. A victim might say things like, I'm always at a disadvantage because of my circumstances. Or everyone is always out to get me. Or everyone else has had it easier than me. It's always been hard for me. And I recognize sometimes that strong language, like always and never, can be off-putting, can be limiting. But let me just say this, that every single one of us has experienced the victim mentality. Every one of us in different areas of our lives are caught up in the victim trap. The conversations end up about my drama and my stories. It ends up becoming a self-affirming prophecy. I am miserable, therefore I am. Now, let me just say, too, before we get too deep into this, a word of caution. I recognize that there are actually victims in the world. In fact, there are victims that are here today. And I don't want to demean. I don't want to diminish. I don't want to just rush past what has happened to so many of you, whether it's crime or racism or sexism or abuse or many other kinds of injustices. That there are always truth to people's stories. Bad things happen to all of us. Life is not a rose garden. But let me just ask you, let me just invite you. Even though, yes, you might be, you probably are a victim, would you consider evaluating, is this mentality good for me? Is it good for the people around me? Is there a way to think about this differently? At the very least, what I consider, instead of thinking of myself as a victim, what would it look like for me to think of myself as a survivor? Maybe that would open up a new way, open up new thoughts, and allow me to move past some of the consequences of the victim's trap. Where does this come from? What are the origins of the victim's mentality? Well, it, part of it comes from our temperament, right? I don't know what your personality of choice is these days. We have so many tests, right? Maybe you're a high D or a high S, or maybe you're a ESTJ with a QRX wing. Maybe you're a 7 with a 6 on the side. I don't know what your temperament is, your personality, but they are as plentiful as the grains of sand on the seashore, or so it seems. And so certainly there are temperaments or wirings or personalities that are more prone to feeling like this, to being caught up in this. But quite honestly, it probably comes from the home that we were born into, or the family that we were born into. Our family of origin probably is what causes us to think this way or feel this way. You know, there are certain homes, and maybe this is the kind of family that you grew up in, where it was just accepted that it was somebody else's fault. Maybe it was always the coach's fault or the principal's fault or the boss's fault. Maybe the script that so many people grow up believing, maybe you grew up this way, that if I'm miserable, you have to love me. And maybe you were allowed to just feel that way over and over and over again, day after day. And you used it to gain a sense of control. And maybe you've never actually challenged yourself. Is there a better way? Well, I want to introduce us today to a specific family, a family that we see in the Old Testament, a character in the nation of Israel who he had every right to feel like, to claim to be a victim. Things did not go well for him, but instead he was able to get past it. He was able to get above it. He was able to change his mind about what had actually happened in his life, and it freed him up to live a kind of life that he wouldn't have otherwise lived. His name is Joseph. Joseph is the son of Jacob and Rachel. Joseph, as far as we know, had at least 10 half-brothers, a full brother, and one half-sister. Joseph, from an early age, was preferred by his father. His father just loved him more. His father showed favor to him. His father gave him that famous article of clothing. You remember, what was it? Yeah, that dope coat that he got when he was a kid. For me, it was the Oakland Athletics bomber jacket that I got, that my sisters always wanted, that they didn't get. But for Joseph, it was that coat of many colors that was his father's way of saying, you are better than all your other brothers. And Joseph, from a young age, just he grabbed a hold of this sense of confidence. And it's what led him. It's what he led with. How do we know this? Well, because he told his brothers about it all the time. He would have dreams and he would interpret the dreams and say, hey, there's going to come a day when y'all are going to be bowing down in front of me. That goes over quite well with your siblings, doesn't it? Right? And so what did they end up doing? They ended up finding a pit and throwing him in the pit and leaving him for dead. Because a brother's got to do what a brother's got to do. Right? Don't act like you've never thought about doing that with one of your siblings before. No, then they decided, you know what? We're not just going to leave him here. Let's take this a step further. Let's actually get something out of this situation. And so there was a car driving by. There was a caravan coming by that had spices and grains. And it was going from where they were in Canaan all the way to Egypt. And they decided to sell their brother into slavery. So there Joseph was, living now in this distant land, away from his family, away from his home. Think about all the messages that he could have told himself about what had just happened. But somehow, he didn't allow that to stop him. No, he took that circumstance that could have derailed him in numerous ways, and he decided to bounce back from it. And through his faithfulness and his trustworthiness and his ingenuity and his hustle, he started to get on an elevator and he started to climb up to the top. To the point where there was a ruler in Egypt named Potiphar. Potiphar had was a very wealthy person, and he had noticed Joseph, noticed that Joseph was able, was a leader, that Joseph had a can-do positive attitude. And he put Joseph in charge of more, to the point where Joseph is now running his entire estate. When one day Joseph realized, maybe for the first time ever, that he was crippled with something that I've never experienced before, dashing good looks. And Potiphar's wife decided, oh, I'm kind of into him, and I'd like to see what could happen if he and I started having a conversation. Maybe one thing would lead to another. And so while he's there in her house, just the two of them alone, Potiphar's wife corners him and lets him know how she feels about him. And Joseph could have done anything in that moment. But Joseph decided to run. He decided to flee. And as he's fleeing, Potiphar's wife grabs his outer garment. And instead of staying, trying to get his coat back, not the one with many colors, but at this point, a different one, Joseph kept running. But unfortunately, Potiphar's wife told her own story about this. She told her own victim story. As soon as Potiphar gets home, she tells him, Potiphar, you're not going to believe what that slave of yours did to me. Potiphar was infuriated. And immediately he threw Joseph into prison, falsely accused of something that he didn't even do. While he's in prison, there's a whole dramatic scene where he ends up meeting a couple of people that could have really helped him out. One of them was a baker, not just any baker, but the baker for the king. And one of them was a cupbearer, not just any cupbearer, but the cupbearer of the king. These two men worked in Pharaoh's office, and because of some things that had happened in their own life, they found themselves in prison with Joseph. But Joseph, again, was a hustler. Joseph had a great attitude, and Joseph had risen to the ranks where even in prison, he was in a position of leadership. And the baker and the cupbearer were under his command. They start having conversations about some dreams that they were having. And Joseph said, hey, this is no problem. I can tell you what those dreams mean. Joseph had this gift. He had this talent. He had this ability to interpret dreams. And so he interprets their dream correctly. And when they get out of prison and make it back into Pharaoh's office again, the line is just so disturbing. But it says that they forgot Joseph, even while he was in prison. So he's sold into slavery, falsely accused, and now forgotten in prison. Can you imagine all the feelings and emotions that he could have bumped into? All the negative energy and the negative feelings of, why could this have happened? What in the world is going on? How could this happen again? But yet somehow, Joseph did not let those negative circumstances allow him or keep him from realizing that God had more for him. That even in the middle of it all, God was doing something great. It's amazing how the prison sometimes causes us to question everything. I'm speaking obviously of the figurative prisons that we find ourselves in, those dark nights of the soul, where we start asking all the tough questions. God, why? God, what are you doing? God, how could this happen again? And somehow, Joseph seemed to ask this question. Could God be setting up the circumstances around me to do something in me and to do something through me? Is God aligning the stars? Is he doing something so great that no one else can see to set this up in such a way that no one would be able to deny that God is the one doing all of this? I don't know how Joseph could have asked this question, but clearly something is leading Joseph. Someone is guiding Joseph to the point where this dramatic scene happens in Genesis 50 toward the tail end of Joseph's life. Again, Joseph had gotten out of prison at this point. Pharaoh had heard about his skill, about his gift. Pharaoh had elevated him to a higher position. He had been responsible. He had been faithful. He had been diligent. And now he's number two in command of all of Egypt. When he has his own dream about a famine that's going to hit this area, not just Egypt, but also Canaan, where he's from. And so Joseph leads the country to do a lot of remarkable things, to save up a lot, so that when the famine hits, they would be ready. But his family had not done so. The times were so tough. Jacob tells his sons, he says, hey, the only thing I know to do is, should you go to Egypt and beg for help? I hear they have food. And so the brothers pack up, make their way over to Egypt, where they have this face-to-face altercation with who? Their own brother. For a moment, Joseph was able to have a conversation with them where they didn't know his identity. But when the moment comes where his identity is now revealed and the brothers realize now they're standing face to face with the very person that we had thrown in the pit, they're scared, they're fearing for their lives, and Joseph responds to them. And I want to look for just a minute at what Joseph says to them, because we get a little picture into Joseph's mind as to what was going on up here that allowed him to live in such a different way. In Genesis chapter 50, verse 19 says this, but Joseph said to them, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? Meaning, I'm not a judge. He's the one who's a judge. I don't have the ability to look through these circumstances and figure out what God is doing. That's not my job. That's his job. And maybe that's what Joseph was able to do when he was sold into slavery. Maybe everything in him wanted to be the vindicator, the one to go and seek retribution. But he had to decide in that moment, am I in the place of God? No. When he was falsely accused, and he had to decide, am I going to take up my own cause, or I'm going to submit my cause to the only one who can do anything about it? Am I in the place of God? When he was forgotten about in prison, and it would have been very easy to just believe the lies that if everyone else has forgotten about me, then maybe God's forgotten about me as well. But he knew the character of God, that God is not one to forget, that God is not one to look over the plight of his people. So he reminds himself yet again, am I in the place of God? No. God was with me when I was sold into slavery. God was with me when I was falsely accused. God was with me when I was in prison. And God's with us right here, right now. And if God is with us, then what harm could come against us that we wouldn't be able to handle or that he wouldn't be able to shine through? I just wonder for you, for me, if we're convinced that God is with us, then what kind of thoughts would go through our mind? If we're convinced that God is actually, that the presence of God is here with us now, that the Holy Spirit of God, as followers of Jesus, lives inside of us, then are we really victims like we tell ourselves we are? Look at the way Joseph reframes this in the next verse. He says, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. You intended this to harm me, but here's the good news. You don't control the world. He does. And he's using this to set up something that none of us can see. He's aligning the circumstances. He's aligning the stars of Joseph's life, not just for Joseph's good, but for the good of those around him as well. Why would we not believe that too? Maybe God is aligning the circumstances of your life to do something great that you can't see right now. Yes, you might be a victim. Yes, you might have had wrong done to you. But what if you chose to believe, okay, that's all right. You meant it for harm. God's going to do something good through it. How would things change? How would it be different? What would it look like if we looked at our situation, our circumstances differently? Instead of being bitter, frustrated, angry, what if we read them differently? Could God be setting up the circumstances around you to do something in you and to do something through you? Maybe it does us no good to continue to tell ourselves, I'm the victim. All this wrong that's been done to me. No, maybe, maybe we could get to a place where we could say, God, could you be using this to do something in me and through me? Look at what Joseph says next. He says, so then, don't be afraid, because I'm going to provide for you and your children. And he reassured them and he spoke kindly to them. This is beautiful. This is huge. Because one of the problems with feeling like a victim is we feel out of control. Now, let me just say this about control. Control is a tricky thing. It's not helpful for us to feel like we're in control of everything, right? You know people like that. You might be sitting with someone who needs to be in control of everything. That will cause devastation on everyone around you. But at the same time, if we sit back with our back against the wall, sitting on our hands, believing that we're in control of nothing, we'll also see the devastation that that causes as well. Control is tricky. It's complex. But there are things that you can control. What could Joseph control in that moment? He could control how he was going to respond. Am I going to respond in retaliation, or am I going to respond in redemption? And he made a decision that day. I'm going to do good for you, and I'm going to do good for your children. And he reassured them, and he spoke to them kindly. Instead of determining what we can't control, maybe to get out of the victim trap, we've got to decide what it is that we can control and take control of that. So what I want to do for just the last few minutes that we have together is I want to give you just a simple plan. Because maybe you're sitting here going, okay, I've identified, I started realizing there's some victim mentality in me. There's this certain situation, or there's this certain problem, or there's this certain area of my life. But what do I do? What do I do about it? Here's just a couple of thoughts as we look at the story of Joseph. Number one, you've got to identify your own victim thoughts. You've got to be able to identify your own victim thoughts. Why? Because the better you get at identifying them, the better you'll be at identifying them, right? If you never identify them, if you never isolate them, then you never actually get to experience combating them, fighting against them. And so you begin with that, identifying your own victim thoughts. And once you start doing this, you'll start seeing them everywhere. This has been true in my own life. I first noticed this when I was 16 years old. When I turned 16, my parents, they gave me this car. It was a 1990 white Volvo 240 DL. It was not a super nice car, but I was very grateful for it. And I just thought, hey, you know what? Maybe the cool part about this is I didn't know anyone at the time with this car. And so I thought at the very least, maybe this is unique. Maybe this just feels like, okay, this is like my thing. This is going to be like part of my vibe that I'm trying to put off with the ladies. I thought, okay, maybe this would be good. That morning I was driving to school. The first morning I was driving, I pulled up at a stoplight and I looked over next to me. What did I see? I saw another 240 DL Volvo. And I thought, huh, I've never seen you in here. When'd you get up in this? You know, like I didn't know you were here. I go to my school. I look around the parking lot. I see like four of them in the parking lot. I'm like, that's weird. They weren't here before, but now all of a sudden they're here. I go to Wendy's that night with some friends. I look in the parking lot of Wendy's. I see a couple Volvo 240 DLs. Where are all these things coming from? Were they all new to the town? No, no, no. I just started noticing them. And once you notice them, you get better at noticing them and you start noticing them more. The same is true for your own thoughts. When you start identifying them, you get better at identifying them and you start seeing more of them, and it allows you to start seeing them more so you can start dealing with them. Number two, would you be willing to get some awareness about the false benefits of your victim thoughts? That there's some false benefits to these thoughts. You know what false benefits are, right? Let's take another example of life. I don't know if you're a sugar person, you know, like after lunch, you got to go find like a piece of chocolate or a cake or something, you know, or an ice cream cone. If that's you, then you get this. If that's not you, then I don't believe you in anything in life. But if that's you, let me just talk for a second, because I know what that feels like, you know, where you start training yourself that you got to have that fix. And it does do some good, right? I mean, what does it do for you? I mean, it gives you like a little energy rush. It makes you feel good. Your brain releases this excess of dopamine and serotonin that makes you feel good about your life, right? And you're like, man, I'm so glad I found this. But then what happens? Like an hour later, you're laying on the bathroom floor trying to take a nap at work, right? Anyone else? No, there's like a sugar crash from after the fix. That benefit that you got was actually a false benefit. And when it comes to our victim mentality, the same thing is true. It allows us to actually avoid having to take responsibility from anything, about anything. If it's always someone else's fault, I don't have to take responsibility. People lavish their attention on us when we start with our sob story. They feel sorry for us. They're less critical of us because they go, oh, well, he's had it rough. She's had it rough. I wouldn't say that if I were you. We're more likely to actually get what we want because we can use those emotions to manipulate others. We feel interesting because we've got all these stories to tell. We're never bored because there's too much drama going on. There's so many benefits that we have to be willing to make ourselves aware, hey, part of me likes this. And as we do that, it starts to take the power away from it. It starts to actually suck the power out of the victim mentality. And then lastly, after you've began to identify them, after you've made yourself aware of some of the false benefits, would you be willing to replace them with something more helpful? What's more helpful? Well, there's a number of things that are more helpful. You could start by just reminding yourself of a perspective that there is someone somewhere else in life that has it worse than you do that's doing better with it. Let me say that again. There's someone somewhere in the world that has it worse than you do and is doing more with it. That's something I remind myself of because it helps me get out of my own mind that's trapped in the victim mentality. Or maybe it's trying to find the silver lining that, hey, as bad as this is, God uses bad. God uses hard. God uses difficult. He makes us stronger in it. That's what he does. If it weren't for the hard situations in life, we just wouldn't grow like God wants us to grow because it's during the difficulty, it's against the resistance that we actually find the growth, make the gains. So maybe there is a silver lining. Maybe it's about finding gratitude. I know whenever I get caught up in the trap, if I can find something I'm grateful for, it snaps me back into the now and reminds me that there is something that I do have right now. Maybe it's finding what you can control. If we take a page from Joseph's book, look at what he did. He did something for someone else. Maybe you could decide, hey, whenever I catch the victim thought, I'm going to find something I can do for someone else. Because when you do for someone else, it gets you out of thinking only about you. It's a little gift that God gives us. I don't know what you need to replace it with, but would you choose to replace it with something more helpful? And would you choose to believe that maybe God is aligning the circumstances around you to do something in you, to do something through you? Would you choose to believe that this breakdown, that any breakdown in life, any breakdown in circumstances or situations or relationship, it's just an opportunity for God to break through? That this is God's opportunity to break through, break out, and shine. See, if we're going to get out of the victim mentality, we can't just look at Joseph. No, we also got to talk about Jesus. Because Joseph really was a forerunner for Jesus. Joseph really is a type of Jesus. Think about it this way. Jesus himself, he was sold into slavery. But what does that mean? Well, he became a human. He had all the power in the world, but he allowed himself to be constrained by humanity. Jesus was falsely accused. He went to the cross. He didn't deserve it. He was accused of things that he had never done. Jesus was forgotten about. See, there was a moment in Jesus' life when he gives his life up on the cross, where he took on being a victim so that you and I could experience victory. He became a victim for us so that we could experience the victory, the freedom of not being caught up in the trap. If you want to get out of the victim mentality, if you want to overcome your victim mentality, you got to look at Jesus. You got to know Jesus. You got to follow Jesus. The Apostle Paul in Philippians 2, I want to call out this verse because he used the term mindset. He said, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. And then he tells us about Jesus. Listen to what he says. He says, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking on the very nature of a servant and being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that above every name, and at that name, the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth. And every tongue would acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Jesus became a victim for you. So would you choose to live in the victory that he provided? Freedom is always so much better than being trapped. He not only pointed the way, but he made the way for us to get out. So maybe today's a day where you need to give more of your life, offer up more of your life to Jesus. Or maybe today's a day where you would give us the opportunity, the privilege of praying for you. Right when our time's over today, out in the lobby, in the studio, which is a room just off the side of the lobby, we're going to have a team of people there that would love to just pray for you. And there may not be a bunch of devastating things going on in life, but sometimes when life gets complicated, you just need someone to pray for you. Maybe you're about to enter into a new season. Maybe a new marriage, or maybe a new job, or maybe it's a new season of singleness, or maybe it's a new season of change or challenge. Would you give us the privilege, the opportunity of just praying for you? It would mean a lot to us, and my belief is that it would eventually mean a lot to you as well. So my hope, my prayer for every one of us is that we would get to a place where we could go, you know what, God, there's a lot going on around me. And instead of feeling like a victim, I'm going to choose to believe that you are aligning the stars. You're aligning my circumstances, the circumstances around me, to do something great in me and to do something great through me for your name and for your sake. Let's pray together. Father, first of all, we thank you for Jesus, for taking on death, taking on our sin, taking on our shame, becoming the true victim. I pray that today would be a day of victory, not because of who wins a game, but because of who overcomes. I pray that we would taste freedom, and as we taste freedom, that we would just want more of it and more of it and more of it. God, you didn't design any one of us to live in the trap. So I pray that today would be a day where you release the captives, each one of us, one at a time, in power and in kindness, in truth and in goodness. And we just thank you for Jesus. We pray all this in his matchless name. Amen. Hey, thanks so much for being with us today. I hope you'll be back next week as we talk about the trap of negativity. Have a great rest of your day. See ya.